Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082.
Hello, good evening. It's Deserted Island Disc again, live on a Wednesday night here in the centre of Sheffield, sunny Sheffield. It's so bright, we've got to shade our eyes here. So Deserted Island Disc, it's a show that most weeks we have someone from the island of Ireland who's deserted that island and now lives in South Yorkshire. But we are struggling to find those kind of people. I set the show up over a year ago now, and I think of every Irish person I've ever met has been on the show who wants to do it. So now we're just going for very interesting people and people who I love. So tonight, I'm very honoured. It's one of my favourite Sheffield musicians. I've met him about 15 years ago, saw him on stage, and he plays that bass like no one else I know, and he's with a smile on his face. It's Mike Fleming. Hello, Mike, how are you doing?
Hi, Ben, how are you?
Good, good, good. So, Mike, I've seen you in the Dizzy Club, and I've seen you in Fagin's. I love seeing you in Fagin's, actually. It's great. So in Fagin's, Mike will just join in with the musicians there and in a session and play along. It's fantastic. So we're going to get to all that, Mike.
We are.
And your musical knowledge is, I think, second to none. Just what I've seen you do and how you pick apart songs to kind of understand where they're at is amazing. So music's obviously been a big part of your life for many years, mate.
It has. I'm not a Sheffielder, and you'll have gathered my connections with Ireland are pretty tenuous, to be honest. They're a bit shaky. I've had a few trips over there, and it's a wonderful country. But, yeah, I'm from Timperley in Cheshire. That's where I was born and brought up. This is where the music story of my life begins, really. We lived, my mum, my dad, my three siblings, so a couple of sisters and an older brother, in Timperley. And the weird thing was, looking back, that we didn't have a record player.
Yeah.
So in a way, my early background was is really short of music coming in from the house. Into the house, because my dad wasn't keen on music radio either.
Yeah.
So
that really surprised me, mate. I mean, just kind of seeing you, I've only known you since you're a musician, since you've been on stage, and you kind of, I've had a few people on the show who are musicians, and they've kind of said, oh, yeah, you know, my dad played, my auntie played, but you had none of that until in your house at all, really.
Not really. Well, what we did have was an old piano, an upright. You know, they were pretty common back in the day, before keyboards came on scene. And I used to be fighting my twin sister Sarah to, from about the age of four onwards, to get on the piano and just plink away. And it was a complete source of fascination for me. So I think that's what triggered my mum and dad to go, Michael, as they called me then, he's got a bit of an ear for it.
Yeah, yeah. So did you work it out yourself, you think, as a four-year-old?
You know, you moved your fingers up one key at a time, and then notes got higher and you went down and they got lower. So, yeah, I was starting at that point, you know, like kids do. We plink away and go, oh, that's a nice sound, we'll try that one.
But not really knowing any songs. I mean, you'd know, you still like nursery rhymes, Twinkle Twinkle and
things
exactly.
like that. Yeah. I'm sure Mum must have sung me nursery rhymes and sung us both nursery rhymes, me and my sister, back in the day, and we joined in. It's just that it was the outside music that's always been a vacuum from my early years. And in a way, Ben, to be honest, I've been playing catch-up ever since.
Well, it doesn't seem that way because your knowledge is there.
Bless you. Yeah, sure.
But what did your parents do for a living?
Well, my dad was an architect. My mum was a primary teacher till she had to give that up. and bring us up. And then she went part-time back into primary teaching. So that was that. But, yeah, in terms of actual getting my first taste of music, to be honest, it was joining a choir, a church choir near us. And then that was significant. It just started letting me understand that music is really just blobs on sticks.
Yeah.
And if the blobs go up, the notes go up. If they go down on this stave, those five lines, the actual note goes down in real time.
Yeah, but you must have had an ear for that, even to understand that without... Yeah,
indeed, yeah. So that allowed me... I've often thought of my life as just having a series of little very, very lucky breaks. And one of them was that I managed to squeeze by the skin of my teeth into Altrincham Boys Grammar School. I don't know how they swung it. I think my old primary head teacher...
It wasn't 11 plus. You're too young for that. Oh, it was 11 plus, was it?
Yeah. I think...
I thought you were too young for that, Mike. We should say what year were you born?
I was born in 1962, so that makes me 63 now.
Yeah.
And I'll shortly be 64. But...
So you got in through the 11 plus. You were bright kid.
Yeah. Yes. And it was an amazing lucky break because... When it came to O-levels, well, it was a no-brainer that I was going to sign up for music O-level, for better than worse. You know, it was the only thing that was a major source of interest in my life, and it was the only thing I was any good at. And the lucky break was that there were only two of us pupils doing music O-level.
Right.
So it was effectively like private tuition, courtesy of the state. I mean, it was in the days when this sort of mad... sort of thing happened.
Yeah, so you've got one teacher to two pupils.
Yeah, so there was no getting round it. It was hard graft and we couldn't doss around at the back of the class because there was only two of us. And it was real noses to the ground.
What instrument were you focusing on at that point?
Well, that was the second really lucky break, which is that back in those days, you got the chance of free instrumental tuition in schools, more or less right across the board. I don't think it really happens now.
Yeah.
There are schemes, but it's not like that complete blanket coverage. So I got a chance to learn the trombone, and that was my first proper instrument to study. And my next lucky break was that I was being taught by a guy called Peter Leary, who was a superb... professional trombonist with the BBC Northern Symphony Orchestra. I've just been looking him up now, and just before coming
in. Yeah, you made preparation, haven't you, for the show?
A little bit of preparation.
Very good.
Yeah,
and no one else does.
He was a complete top banana, top professional. So it was my first experience of ever meeting this very rare... type of person, which was the professional musician.
Yeah.
And he showed me different styles. So we would play one piece in a complete classical style, playing a bit of Wagner or something.
Yeah.
And then the next piece, it would have been, he'd have been moonlighting for some swing orchestra in Manchester somewhere on a Saturday night. And he'd be playing another piece in a big sort of droopy and sloppy jazz trombone style. So wonderful tuition.
Yeah, and when's the last time you played the trombone then? Yeah.
Oh, now I'm going to say about 1984.
Wow.
That was the last time. I wasn't actually very good at it, to be honest, okay. Ben. I'm going to blame it on having a pretty rubbish instrument all that time. I scraped through it. And then, so that was school. And then the great thing that you can't hold an adolescent down for long when it comes to music. So a few good old friends just introduced me to a bit of rock.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to take us on to our first song this evening that matters quite a bit to me. It's a song I was introduced to. It was Free's song, My Brother Jake.
Okay, let's play that one. Thanks, Mike.
Wednesday morning at 5 o'clock as the...
My brother Jake
some friends.
My Brother Jake. That's the choice of Mike Fleming, my guest tonight on Deserted Island Disc. So, Mike, you were saying that that was in your adolescence, really. So you'd had a childhood which was kind of a bit bereft of music in your house. There wasn't that not a lot going out. But then when you got to school and you met, had mates, was it they introduced you to that kind of music? And
yeah, in a word. Yeah. I had an old friend at the time, a contemporary friend of school lad called Smithy, and Pete Smith, I think he was. We always called each other by surnames in those days. And his dad was a jazz pianist as by trade, as a living. And Smithy himself was a mean piano player, jazz piano player. I didn't realise because he was very quiet about it, but in no time at all, we were forming a small band.
And, okay.
Actually at school and doing the old school concerts and things.
Yeah, wow.
So, yeah, yeah. So that was great.
So you liked the being on stage, but you, yeah.
I did, and I started using the skills from O-levels to actually write parts for, simple parts for the band. So it's where it begins, you know.
Yeah.
So then I had a chance to get into A-levels, and of course it was another no-brainer to take
music
A-level, yeah. As well as English A-level, and I had another lucky break, because the number of people doing music A-level was precisely one, which was me. So I had 2 years with my dear old teacher Chris Foy. Again, and that really was one-to-one tuition, so we could really get a teeth into the curriculum of it. And
that's why do you think it was then? Just so few people doing music.
I don't know. It was who knows? Yeah, it was just it was not considered cool music, you know.
Yeah.
But looking back, I realise it was a fantastic chance just to start filling in all the gaps that I needed to in order to take it further on 2 years down the line. Yeah.
That's interesting. What was the relationship like with your teacher then?
Chris. Well, I didn't call him Chris. He was Mr. Foy all the way through. But at that point, you're becoming a young adult, I suppose, aren't you?
Yeah.
You're a maturing, yeah. In inverted commas, yeah. Adolescent. And so, yeah, we could talk at quite a personable level. It wasn't all formal and whatever. And at that point, he was calling me Michael. And, you know, it was a bit more, almost a bit more
even, yeah.
Even, and in the
Well, that's it. If you've got that one-to-one spending all that time together, it's a good job you get on, isn't it?
Unbelievably lucky. Well, he was a genuinely quite an interesting guy, actually.
Yeah.
Anyway, in his own right, and you start seeing the human side of teachers when you get to know.
Yeah, that's good.
One of the things I had to study, of course, was music and keyboard skills.
Yeah.
And I managed to wangle my way into my first job as an adolescent, which was playing piano at a restaurant, so a restaurant pianist,
right.
in the village there. And
so back, and, background music, not singing.
Yeah, it was. I was rubbish at it, of course. But you know, it was early days, and I didn't really know what I was doing. But I did have an ability to play by ear, so I quickly sketched down as many tunes as I thought, you know, would pass off as restaurant pieces.
Yeah.
And then I discovered that, of course, one of the things is that, of course, nobody's listening.
Yeah.
So that's fine by me. You know, you can...
It's like this show.
Chill back. Sorry?
It's like this show. Sorry.
Surely not. Surely not. And then you could discover that... then you discovered that, you know, I'd be playing the first half of a piece and... frankly, daydreaming about other stuff. And then suddenly I'd arrive at the middle bit and I'd end up with the middle bit of another piece accidentally blended in. And nobody really took any notices of it. I can't remember. There's a hilarious story of Les Dawson, who was a superb pianist. He absolutely was. And he, in his very earliest jobs as an impoverished jazz pianist, he had the same job, restaurant pianist, and he realised nobody was actually listening, and he'd rapidly get bored. And if he wanted to attract everyone's attention, he would play his left hand in one key and his right hand a semitone different in the other key. So two different keys going on.
Yeah.
And the semitone difference was goddamn ghastly. And everyone would suddenly turn and look surprised. And then he'd go back onto completely unison keys.
Yeah.
And everyone think, oh, that was weird. And it just
But it's apparently a great skill to be able to do that, though, isn't it?
Oh, unbelievably clever. Yeah. I couldn't do it.
So let's get back to you, mate. Where are we up to? So you go on, you've got a few...
Well, I was getting... I was getting... finding some confidence in music and getting itchy feet, to be honest.
Yeah.
And... at about, well, we did have a piano, we did have a record player about 17, when I was about 17 or 18, just before college. But just before this, I had a chance to go on a bit of a road trip with an older mate. And we'd ended up going to Scotland, and I was up right on the northeast coast there, up at Fraserburgh at the harbour. And we'd ended up at the harbour, and I was looking at these ships, and I've always been fascinated with ships. And I said, oh, I'd love to go on one of these trawlers and just experience what it's like. And this mate of mine said, well, what are you waiting for? Why don't you? Why don't you just ask around? And I thought, oh, there's a thought. Never thought of that. So I literally spent the next hour trolleying round the harbour side.
Trolling the trawlerman.
Trawling... sounds really ropey, that, doesn't it? Asking various fishermen whether it was possible to just go out for a trip. And the first one was a really big ship. And the captain said, well, you can do, of course, but we won't be back for 3 weeks. You do know that, don't you? And I was like, right, okay. Thanks anyway. And then I walked to a smaller one, and he was a bit bemused, this skipper, but he said, well, if you're there at 3 o'clock at the next sailing with the high tide, tomorrow morning you can... And he presumably thought, we'll never see the last of this guy. Yeah. But who was on this harbour side at 3 a.m.?
<Well done. laughs> And did you pay him, or they did it for free, or was it...
Oh, God, no way. I was just there bumming
You didn't have to pay them, though? No.
No. I see what you're saying, though. It was... This would have been 1979, something like that, in the good old days before they wouldn't have dreamt of taking anyone on.
Health and safety.
It was a fascinating experience, because I realised it was just how dangerous the job was. I had no idea. You know, there was clanking chains and winches unprotected. And I was just told to stay in the wheelhouse and just watch when the actual catch was going on and the trawling nets were being released and then hauled back in a few hours later. Fascinating, absolutely fascinating insight into the lives of other people in far-off areas of the UK.
Well, that led you to think you don't want to do that, are you open doors?
I was never serious about going into fishing, but yeah. I was just itching to see what the whole world of that was like, and it was completely fascinating. And I've been utterly fascinated by ships and their construction. And this was all timbers, and there's no, you know, it's almost like there's no right angles. Everything's curved timber. Everywhere.
So what did you do then? What after that?
Well, that was just one trip over to in Scotland. I got back 36 hours later, something, you know, fairly stunned by what an amazing experience it was. And should we have the next song? Because this is Paul McCartney's song, She's Leaving Home. You heard a snatch of it earlier.
No, I don't think so. No.
But I love this song. I've always loved it. And it depicts the idea of the sadness and the exhilaration of leaving home from two sides of it. Yeah, it's a real story song by Paul McCartney, isn't it?
It is lovely. She's Leaving Home, The Beatles, Paul McCartney.
Wednesday morning at 5 o'clock, as the day begins, silently closing her bedroom door, leaving the note that she hoped would say more. She goes downstairs to the kitchen, clutching her handkerchief. Quietly turning the back door key, stepping outside, she is free.
We gave her most of our lives,
is leaving,
sacrificed most of our lives.
Oh.
We gave her everything money could buy.
Snores as his wife gets into her dressing gown, picks up the letter that's lying there, standing alone at the top of the stairs. She breaks down and cries to her husband, Daddy, our baby's gone. Why would she treat us so thoughtlessly? How could she do this to me?
We never thought of ourselves,
is leaving.
Never a thought for ourselves. We struggled hard all our lives to get by.
She's leaving home after living alone for so many years. Friday morning at 9 o'clock, she is far away, waiting to keep the appointment she made, meeting a man from the motor trade.
What did we do that was wrong?
He's heavy.
We didn't know it was wrong.
Beautiful, beautiful. What a song. Choice of Mike Fleming on Deserted Island Disc. So it's the show where we usually get people on from the island of Ireland talking about their life and their journey to Sheffield and South Yorkshire. But as I say, we've got Mike tonight, who's more interesting than the previous... Oh, I can't say that, can I? Mike's great. Let's just leave it at that. So, Mike, we're following your life, and you're just about to get to college?
Yes, that's right. I've just finished school at this point, and again, all... Everything in my life seems to be just one lucky break after another. So I managed to get into do a degree in English and music at Ripon College, of all places.
And kind of North Yorkshire, is it?
Yeah, yeah. And I'd really been taken by it. I was a Manchester lad, really, and then saw this lovely little market town up in up in North Yorkshire above Harrogate, and started there. I was studying for my English part of the degree. I was studying trombone and piano, but as I say, I didn't really flourish on the trombone, though I do love the instrument. I absolutely love it now, it was at that point that I walked into one of the music rooms one day and saw this amazing instrument. I knew what it was. I had come across them before, but it was a double bass.
Double bass, yes.
And it was sitting there, and I think there was a magic sign above it, which was invisible to everyone else, that said, "Play me." So I had a little try, and I thought, oh, this is easy. These strings are set up in fourths. I know how fourths work.
Yeah.
And in a way, the instrument is very much something you can start at a basic level and find an easy way into if you've got a bit of a understanding of music. And so I started tinkering with this. And then one day, the college chaplain, who became the next guy to figure in my life in a really funny way, he was called Ron Kent, and he was a really colourful character. Used to walk around in leathers with a cowboy hat, Stetson on, and a real character in the college. And I heard this ropey old barrel house piano being played, and I went, "Who's that?" I go, "Oh, blimey, it's the Reverend, yeah. It's Reverend Ron." So I said, "Hello," and he said, "Was that you playing double bass there? Just wait, come in. Shall we have a bit of a jam? Do you know this blue? Do you know a blues sequence? Should we do a blues in G?" I'll have a go with that. And before we knew it, we happily jammed away for half an hour. And then he said to me, "Right, your name's Mike, is it? Right, do you want to join my band? I've got a bit of a band with a couple of townie friends in the town here, and we could really do with a bass player." Yeah. I went, "Well, yeah, but this isn't my instrument. This is the college instrument." He said, "Leave it to me." Yeah. And then we...
And you'd not really played it before either. I mean, you've not really been playing bass.
No, but I was just picking up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, amazing.
We just had a couple of rehearsals. But what he did was when all the music staff went home, he would turn up, you know, by plan, and he said, "Right, come on, we'll I'll have a word with the porters, and we'll sneak it past the porters' lodge." You see,
yeah, well, it's not the easiest instrument to sneak past.
No, exactly. And it was, "Oh, Reverend, oh, you've got permission to borrow this, have you? Oh, that's fine by me, Reverend, if that's the case."
Yeah. And then, it looks like a man to trust.
The same porters were looking at me, looking very suspiciously, going, "Yeah, well, we've had run-ins with you before, whatever you're called." But they couldn't really argue with a gentleman of the cloth, could they?
Yeah.
So then we stuck it in his Morris Marina, this double bass with the neck sticking out of the passenger window, the front passenger window, and a red rag tied against it just in case we were, I don't know how that was meant to help with any cyclists because they'd have the backs to us. But we ended up just playing a few gigs in the local pub. So there was me, there was Ron, there was a trumpeter and stroke guitarist called... I can't remember. Chrissy was called, and a clarinetist,
Wonderful. So you're doing like swinging.
Banjo player called John. Yeah, and we just mix between folk, you know, good old Irish potboilers, and jazz.
Yeah. Wonderful. So, yeah, I mean, we've got a treat that tonight we're in the Sheffield Live Studios, which are on the fourth floor, I have to say. Me and Mike, mostly Mike, have brought his double bass into the studio. And Mike said, really, your analogy, it's like being a goalkeeper playing bass, which is wonderful, in that on your own, it's you'd usually have the full team out, wouldn't you?
We would, yeah, sure. In other words, nobody wants to listen to a series of very nicely played bass lines, but by themselves. But I'm just going to play you one of the bass lines we actually use, and it's the opening bass line of My Baby Just Cares For Me by Nina Simone.
Oh, go on, Mike.
And it goes on like that.
Wonderful, Mike.
It's a bit of a signature opening bass line that everyone knows what that's going to be when it starts, isn't it?
That's fantastic. And I was saying earlier on, sorry, that your musical knowledge and the way I've seen you in jam sessions and sessions in pubs, you just kind of join in with anyone. So that kind of spirit of joining in with the vicar has remained with you, and it's people
absolutely.
So while I've got you in, and we've carried it all the way up, I'm just going to throw a few of my favourite bass lines out there and see if you can play them. This will be a test, won't it?
It will. We tried this just before we came on the air, and I think I managed to do it approximately. But yeah, go on, try me out, Ben. What are your suggestions?
Well, I love, I mean, it's quite different. Love Cats by The Cure.
Right, here's how I think it goes, and you're going to get loads of messaging. I don't like it, doesn't go like that, but let's see. I think it goes. Is that right?
That's perfect, yeah, it's very good, very good.
Etc. Hey. Oh, wrong button.
I knew you could do it.
Yeah. So it would massively help if there was a couple of guitarists here I could just lock in, but I'm solo.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I've not let you know. I mean, it's, what about something more in that genre, like Blue Moon?
Oh, Blue Moon. Yeah, we tried that one, didn't we? All right, I'm going to have a go at singing it. Excuse the
even
throttle parrot sound, because I'm not normally the singer. But Blue Moon. You saw me standing alone without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own, etc.
Oh, so. Beautiful, beautiful, amazing. Thanks, Mike. You put that down now, won't I? Yes. Do you know what, but it occurred to me that I'm going to ask, it might be a daft and simple question, Mike, but the instruments you see like in a more classical orchestra, are they kind of totally different? But you know, people are...
No, is the answer. It's the same instrument. That double bass would serve just as well in a symphony orchestra.
Yeah.
The only minor detail is the action of a classical instrument, double bass, is a lot higher. So the action is the height of the string above the fingerboard. Yeah. Board, because they want a lot more natural tone coming out.
Because they don't, do that, yeah. So, and obviously they have a bow.
I don't personally play with a bow, but there's plenty of jazz bassists who do. I've only ever been self-taught, so I've not gone in that direction. I'm not sure. It's just one of those things.
You're fabulous as you are. Wonderful. I mean, I think I know we're jumping about in your timeline a bit, Mike, but I think some of those songs you play in your current band, I know we can jump. Can we get to that bit? Sorry, Mike. Just about the Dizzy Club and kind of, well, how they were formed and also kind of what kind of stuff you do, where people can see you.
Yeah, I mean, time's moving on, so I probably have to, I've realised I've got loads of little chapters that I'm going to have to skip, but that's fine.
Well, and, we can come back to it, mate. I just think it links into your playing there.
Yeah. Well, all I will say is that I eventually settled down in Worksop and met my partner there, Rita, in Worksop. And we had a band at that time called The Tavern Band, which was just a bunch of good time lads having a laugh, playing folk music, basically.
Yeah.
We were able to do harmonies on it. And the event, the main venue that we played was a bonkers place called the Manor Lodge, and we played there every 2 weeks. It's just outside Worksop, and this was in the 90s when there was a bit more money's going on, and it was this superb, hilarious party basically every 2 weeks, and we were paid to come and play this thing. But it was a beautiful event. It was just tremendous. It was one big mass sing song.
Yeah.
So the whole audience just joined in with our stuff every
fantastic.
Fortnight.
Sounds great.
That's great. So then, of course, eventually I was getting itchy feet again and wanted to get over and see much more of life in a city. I'd not really experienced it. So Sheffield beckoned, and I started getting into Fagan's. I'd heard about this pub. I'd literally phoned Sheffield Tourist Information saying, is there anywhere where there's any live music you can just join in on, you know, live music pubs? And I could hear this conversation by the call handler saying, Sylvia, is Fagin still going for music? And she said, oh, yeah, it is. Oh, you want to try Fagin's on Broad Lane there? Yeah. So I just scribbled this down, figured out, it was all days before sat-navs.
Yeah, there was it, yeah.
Figured out to get it. And this astonishing old boozer turned up. Well, I turned up to it, and I couldn't believe quite what I was seeing. It was as scruffy as a place as you're ever likely to find, but it was just wonderful in this back room. And I sat there the first night, and people started coming in with instruments, and there was one seat at the front near the fireplace that was left empty. And I thought, aye, what's that all about? How's that? And eventually this guy came in. He turned out to be called Patrick Walker.
I
remember in the first time he was in a vest, had long hair, a fiddle case under his arm, ordered a beer, chit-chatted away for 10 minutes, and then suddenly, you know, got the instrument out, and this astonishingly beautiful Irish fiddle music started, and I couldn't believe what I was hearing, and I thought, this is it, I've come home. This is an astonishing place. I was going to say, this is where the Dizzy Club eventually formed. This was my band that still goes now, and it's been going for 35 years, something like that. It started with me eventually taking my double bass in and busking away with Patrick and the other players. And then this guy in an old Mac turned up one day and everyone turned and went, John, hello, what are you doing? Good to see you. Give us a song, will you? Yeah. And he went, all right. And he grabbed a guitar, turned the instrument upside down and just belted out I think it was Lady is a Tramp or something. Yeah. And I thought, I know that. And put the bass line in, and history was made at that point.
Yeah.
And we started forming this crazy little jazz trio. John Naylor, me and Patrick Walker on fiddle.
Oh, fantastic. It's amazing that grew out. Because I've known Dizzy Club for a long time.
You have, yeah.
But I didn't really understand how you'd formed, and if I was going to guess how you'd formed, I would never think it would have been about Fagin's.
Via Fagin's.
because you're
highly unlikely.
Very professional. You're very tight as a group, amazing musicians. I mean, all of you, and John as a lead singer is fantastic. And through the years, you've added people to that group, haven't you? And people have been in and out, haven't they? But I think, I mean, Pat Walker's one of the, I mean, finest fiddle players in the world, isn't he? He's just amazing how he is. You guys make a beautiful sound, but Pat's not in the country now, is he?
No, he moved over to Croatia about probably 10 years ago, maybe longer. He's big on the Croatian-Irish scene.
Yes.
And that is a thing.
But you had, you had to settle for Shez Sheridan coming in, I suppose.
We had to slum it with Shez. Shez is an astonishing guitarist. We also, I should say, we had Andy Cook and Colin Elliott, of course, joined us. Yeah. And we were a five-piece, then we ended up as a six-piece with John Trier joining us on keyboards.
Yeah, yeah. And then Mr. Hawley stole them all.
Then that Mr. Hawley, bless him, pinched the band off us for various complicated reasons. And the guys all went, well, listen, we've got to do it. This is the big time.
Yeah, yeah.
So Andy left.
John,
Shez Sheridan left. Shez left, of course, at that point. And who else left?
John Trier and Colin. Yeah.
John Trier, yes. So we we were back down to two. And then Patrick rejoined us.
Yeah.
And then Shez rejoined us, so it was a usual mishmash of
there's loads and loads of stuff to talk about Dizzy Club and the rest of your life. We're getting down to the last 15 minutes, so what we need to play a song. Let's play You Look Gorgeous, which
this is a song that I think it was on our first album that we produced, and it's a self-penned by John Naylor.
John Naylor, about his lovely wife, Annie
who's sadly no more.
Sadly passed away coming up to a year ago. So, yeah, it's a beautiful tribute to John and Annie. You look gorgeous.
So love you, no you don't, yes I do, I know it's true when I hear you say, you take it to paradise with whiskers away. You're my baby, no I'm not, yes you are, so crazy, all the love that I got, oh woman there is something I always knew, sugar, ain't never been sweeter than you. Better sweeter than you. Better sweeter, sweeter. I'll be ready. No, you won't. Yes, I will. I feel dizzy. How about a pink pill? I'll introduce my certain point of view. The sugar ain't never been sweeter than you. Whoa, I wanna see you dancing in the moonlight up above. So many curves. All my eyes tingle and nerves react inside. Don't ever, ever break free. Can you excite my baby every time that you are near? Have you a spell to cast a mist or a dissel that I believe is this magical moment? You look gorgeous. No, I don't. Yes, you do. I so love you. No, you don't. Yes, I do. A woman, there is something I always knew. The sugar ain't never been sweeter than you. Thank you.
so love you.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
A woman, there is something I always knew. The sugar.
Oh, lovely. Lovely voice of John Naylor there and the Dizzy Club. And that's Mike Fleming, my guest tonight on bass. You'll hear him. And you had Pat Walker there. And you're on backing vocals as well on that one, yeah?
Yeah, you could hear Patrick doing his little line of soloing there. And yes, we were all... It is what we specialise in is backing vocals. So it's all part of the swing scene. It's wonderful.
People can find Dizzy Club on, well, Spotify and those kind of music.
You can
channels.
Download all our tracks for free, should you wish. And we'd be delighted to see you at any forthcoming gigs. Though they're a little bit thin on the ground. I think I've got we have another one. It's going to be Woodseats Church. I don't think.
Yeah, I'll find out. Dizzy Club. You have a Facebook page, don't you? And
we do.
There's a website, I think, isn't there?
There is.
So you can people find you. You've done lots of gigs over the years, haven't you? But I suppose it's you've all have other lives as well, don't you? As things going on,
so absolutely.
You're still out there gigging. I think I've seen you twice this year already. So it's
excellent.
Fantastic nights, and hope to get to see you again soon. Throughout this year. So, but I mean, you must have some fantastic stories over. As you say, over 30 years of playing in Dizzy Club, you might not be able to remember all of them. Are we allowed to talk about how you got the name Dizzy Club and what it means?
Well, you're very welcome. There's quite a lot of debate, stroke, argument about this.
Okay.
I say that I'm sure it was me who actually thought the name up,
yeah.
But John thinks it was him. Patrick thinks it was him, I think. So it's one of those things.
You're all in agreement it's good, then.
Yeah, we all think it was the best name that we could have come up with, you know.
So I think there might have been some dizziness in the group at times.
There was a sousson of dizziness.
But also Dizzy Gillespie.
Dizzy Gillespie is a little bit of a connection. But no, to be honest, we have a very... easy-go-lucky, is that the expression?
Yeah.
easy-go-lucky style. So people think we're just a bit dizzy, which we blooming well.
You enjoy yourself.
It's half the
fun, you've enjoyed yourself.
We're having a laugh on stage.
And you played Glastonbury, didn't you?
We did.
About 10 years ago, maybe longer.
Yeah, 10 years. Yes, it's got it.
Probably longer
it could
now,
have been 10, yeah, yeah 10 or yeah. 11 years back. It was a moment not to be forgotten in a hurry. But... the story goes
stage,
that
yeah.
John, yeah, one of the Glastonbury contacts, organisers, contacted John saying, we're interested in some Sheffield jazz. We hear that you're a good guy to talk to. And he said, absolutely the best to talk to, mate. And he negotiated there and then on the spot for at least three Sheffield jazz outfits, including Nicola Farnan, Nicola's outfit, to play at Glastonbury, and we had a wonderful time. It was one of the drought years, so it was really hot,
sunny, and
but you know, that's a lot better than this the usual pea
the opposite,
rain
yeah, yeah.
The mud bath that Glastonbury usually has.
Fantastic. Well, we're coming towards the end. I think there's a couple of things I want to touch on, really. So yeah. We talk about your wife who sadly passed away.
Yeah, she was my partner. Yeah, we never married.
Sorry,
but
partner,
this was Rita, and it'd be a shame not to touch on her. our connection, but she is now sadly no longer with us. Yeah, she died of cancer a few years ago. But she has been a figure in my life that I can't overestimate her importance, and a great follower of the Dizzy Club as well. The thing about Rita, when we first met, this was over in Worksop at the Manor Lodge, she used to watch the tavern band, every 2 weeks, and must have really enjoyed it. Kind of liked the look of this small bass player, but thought, I'm having nothing to do with him because he's a musician. You know, they can't be trusted. Eventually I got to know her properly, and I had all on persuading her that I was the exception.
Yeah,
that I was, you know, I was a reliable.
Were you doing the running? Guys. Did you make the move?
Yes, well in done. A word, yes, by text. It's not very romantic, is it? But I didn't know how else to proceed with it. And she eventually said, well, listen, I'll give you a try, but don't even think about messing around with me, because I'll dump you. And I'd got my marching orders from the word go. But she was a wonderful woman.
Yeah.
And the thing about her, she was an incredible dancer. Your wife, Tracy, has said to me earlier on this evening, Mike, mention Reet's dancing.
Yeah, I had a dance with her when you were playing.
Yeah.
She's fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, so light on her feet. I used to say there was more grace in her one finger of her hand than any limb of my body, you know. She was just a beautiful natural at it, and everyone remembers her for that as well. So she would be leaping up as soon as a piece like that one you just heard came on. She'd be leaping up. Nobody would stop her. She couldn't stop herself getting up and bopping on the front of the stage. We will all miss her badly, and I still miss her these days. Yeah,
no, wonderful. Well, we're going to play the last song
in a moment.
But really, just to finish off, really, just to kind of say what you're up to these days. So you do a lot of writing yourself, don't you?
This is a weird thing. It's a hobby. I've not really published anything, but about 10 years ago, I was thinking there's a set of such astonishing stories, just attached to the Dizzy Club to start with. Why on earth am I not writing these down? Yeah. They will be forgotten if I don't. And I just started that. I thought there's probably a dozen good stories to be had here.
Yeah.
Well, 380 stories later, I'm still coming up with new ones. Obviously not all about the Dizzy Club. They were only a small section. But just about life and the astonishing people you meet, and this amazing city of Sheffield that we all live in. It genuinely still staggers me, the incredible people you meet and the music that happens in the city in the most unlikely little pubs and back rooms and things like that. So I agree.
It's
fantastic. I'm just keeping these stories. I might stick them onto a blog one day, a few at a time. I don't know.
Yes, let's get them out there, mate. Let's get them out. A friend of mine's starting to do kind of a spoken word on Sheffield Live.
Oh, okay.
So we'll introduce you, and maybe you can, because we've not had time to do that tonight. I know you. It would have been good to get at least one of your stories in. Sorry, Mike.
Not
but
at all.
Time has beaten
time
us.
Time has beaten us,
as it does, as it does in the show quite often. So, all we've got to do is play this last song. So, do you want to introduce it? And
this was. I'm going to finish the whole thing with a song that was very, very dear to Rita's heart, and it's Who Knows Where the Time Goes by Sandy Denny,
yes,
I believe, and originally was it all part of Fairport Convention? This, I think, I should know more of this, and it was one of her utter most favourite pieces, really. So
let's finish with this. But thank you, Mike. It's been wonderful.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for everyone for listening. Thank you.
across the evening sky. All the birds are leaving, but how can they know? It's time for them to go. Deserted shore, your fickle friends are leaving. But then you know it's time for them to go. But I shall. Of time, well, who knows where the time goes? Who knows where the time goes? Not alone. While my love is near me, and I know it shall be so, till it's time to go.